Live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and the callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show for the 128th time. My name's Alon, I'm the host of the show, and of course I've got my wonderful and equally hosting co-host, Ara.
Hey, what's up, man?
Ara the Shimini-Bong, Binny-Bang, Shirini-Binny, something?
Yeah, that's my name. Don't wear it out.
All right, and behind the glass, as always, we've got Andrew running the show over there. If you hear it, it's because he played it, at least in most cases. And, you know, you'll hear extra stuff from time to time as well. Thank you, Andrew. So today we're going to talk about all sorts of stuff, as always. We might even pretend that we have something useful to say. And these are the topics we're going to cover. I want to talk about some emotion in games, or rather games that try to affect you emotionally. Ara brought this topic up to me earlier today, and I thought, hey, that's a good one. So if you guys have any opinions on that, if you want to share with us any experiences you've had that have moved you emotionally, you should give us a call, 866-536-1100. And later on in the show, Ara is going to share a tear-jerking story about him playing Super Mario Bros. 2 when the princess fell down and, you know, lost
later
her life.
On? How about right now?
Right now?
Actually, yeah. I mean, I've got a bone to pick with that topic, I guess. I guess you can't really argue against the topic, but...
Well, that's why we're going to save it until we actually talk about it later in the show.
Fair enough.
Here's how we open the show. I talk about what games I've been playing. I ask you what games you've been playing. We both inevitably discuss something that's uninteresting. And then people call in to ask why we aren't playing the most recent games.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. So I finally got to play that Prey demo. It's been out for 2 weeks, I think. I forgot.
Yeah, so what did you think about
that? When it finally came out, I was waiting for it and waiting for it. And I didn't read the post on Joystick or wherever it is I read it that it was actually released on Live. So I went a whole weekend when I could have been playing it, sitting around doing nothing. Could have played it, didn't. Finally got it, and it was during the week when I didn't have time to play it. And the weekend came, and my friend took his 360 back, so I didn't even have time to play it. But I did yesterday. I tried out the multiplayer, and I tried out the single player actually earlier in the week.
How far did you get through it?
Not far enough, because I never had long enough to stay with it. And then one time it's all right, we're going to eat dinner, so I'm going to leave it on. We'll, you know, just turn off the TV or whatever. And went back to it, and someone had messed it up.
Hello.
Thank you, Andrew.
All right.
So anyway, the single player looks like it has some potential. It's obviously very story driven. It does this whole like momentous event a la Half-Life.
Did you get to the that spirit body whatever part?
Where you get to spirit walk?
Yeah.
Well, in multiplayer, it's right off the bat you can do it. So yeah, I tried that. It's an interesting concept, but in multiplayer, you start spirit walking, you don't know what the hell you're doing, and you're shot immediately, and you're no longer doing it. So I need more time with it. To be honest, like, here's my point. Playing the game, everyone's talking about how incredible it is, and I haven't played it long enough to feel what's incredible about it yet.
Well, that new mechanic seems kind of interesting. I mean, I don't really think anyone's done it quite that way before.
The spirit walking thing?
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, but I don't know enough about it. Because
right.
I know that my body stays there, and then I go off and do something else, but do other people see my spirit?
Right.
I don't know. I didn't see anybody else doing it, and I don't know if I can, and that's sort of my point.
I presume the enemies would be able to see you somehow. I mean, it sounds interesting. It's kind of, but you're right, though. It's kind of hard to tell whether it's, like, you know, something that would kind of, like, scale in interesting ways as you play the game, or if it's basically just, like, some kind of, you know, basically a fancy way of, you know, going over here and pressing a switch, essentially.
Yeah, well, I mean, when I was doing it in multiplayer, it basically seemed like, all right, your body stays sort of hovering for a minute. You walk off away from your body, and you go to shoot people with a bow and arrow, right? And my question is, do they see me as I'm approaching them? Or is it like, I'm a ghost they can't see and I can just shoot them with the bow?
Maybe someone who knows can call in.
Maybe they can. I'm hoping for it. It's 866-536-1100. Tell me if there's a part of the game that is really amazing, because I haven't had enough time with it. And supposedly, it's great. So I guess the whole game is coming out really soon, like this week or next week. So people will be able to play the whole thing and see what's really great about it. But I just played multiplayer with, like, people I'd never heard of for 5 minutes, right? Now, one of the other serious game mechanics is that you can walk on the walls and the ceiling in designated walk-on-the-ceiling areas. Were you aware of this?
Oh, I wasn't. That's really clever. That's never been done before.
Really?
It's been done a million times.
You sound sarcastic, but it hasn't actually been done in first-person shooters.
Didn't they do that in one of those Alien versus Predator ones?
I think that's, like, the only one that I can think of.
Yeah. And then, of course, like, I don't know, in, like, the Metroid Prime games, you know, you can kind of, you know, go on the walls in designated places, but it's very, very limited. So, I don't know if that really counts.
And you end up upside down, like, inverted gravity, and then you're shooting down at people, so you've constantly got to be aware of people on the ceiling as well. But it's only on, like, there's these rails that ride up the ceiling, basically, like these gravity fields or whatever. I don't know the storyline behind them, but you just walk up them, and then, but if you walk off of that point, then you fall down.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like those tracks they have where you can, ride around on with your ball in Metroid Prime.
Really?
But I'm sure it's used completely differently.
Well, because you're not in a ball, you're shooting people.
Right.
But also, it's very disorienting when you jump off of the ceiling, and then you're suddenly back on the ground. There's not, like, enough visible motion to know that you've been flipping over, and it was really disorienting for me, but I only played it for a few minutes, so I'm sure it's something you would get used to. But anyway, my point is I want to give it more time, and I certainly want to hear anybody else's opinion, so feel free to call in and talk about it. You been playing anything lately?
Actually, there's this one game I did play, which I'm pretty sure that probably nobody knows what I'm talking about here.
So bring it up, please.
So there's this there's a new Dreamcast game that came out a couple months ago. Of course, not in this country. It's a Japanese game. It's called Under Defeat. It's made by one of my favorite developers of all time, which also nobody will know. They're called G-Rev. They made a whole bunch of games in the Darius series in the past, and some of those same people worked on another game called Gradius V. Anyway, this is basically like an arcade-style straight-up shooter. I played a little bit. One thing that's really interesting in it is that basically when you get hit in this game, the game kind of freezes for about, I don't know, maybe like a quarter second or a half a second, and then it continues. And I thought that was really ingenious because, you know, when you get hit in shooter games, a lot of times you're like, oh, well, what hit me? Oh, well, you never see it because everything's going by so fast. But here you get to actually see, like, they kind of like remind you. It's like, oh, yeah, this is what hit you, you know.
Oh, so it's not you that freezes the entire game.
The entire game just pauses for that fraction of a second. And
so do you have a life meter or something?
Nope.
Because most shooters, you just die.
Right. Well, it pauses, and then you die.
Okay.
So they're kind of adding insult to injury. But
wouldn't
it's
you
really
want, like,
nice
a one-second replay
device
where you can see the trailer of the bullet that came and hit you, where it came from? And
it's not quite that elaborate.
That would be kind of neat.
Yeah, it might be.
Possibly annoying when it happens over and over.
Yeah, I don't know. The way they did it, I think, is really slick and really simple, and it's really effective for feedback. I mean, you can tell what hit you. You can tell what mistake you made, you know?
So
I thought that was pretty cool.
Only for experts, I'm guessing.
It's pretty hardcore, yeah. One of the things I don't like about it is that basically, like, your ship, your helicopter that's shooting stuff seems kind of gigantic in this game, and it feels like you're very big, you know? You don't really feel like you can very easily dodge all those bullets coming at you.
Does your ship ever morph during the game to be not so big?
Not that I know of.
All right, another key gameplay element missed out on. Who needs to hire me as a designer? Move over to Japan, learn the language. I think all I need to do is learn big, small, shoot, die. And I could pretty much make a shooter, right?
No, I think you need to.
Oh, and giant squid.
then you can make a crappy shooter, probably.
Okay. I could make sexy Parodius. Have you ever played those?
Yeah, that's a pretty good game, actually.
I've got one of them for the PlayStation.
Yeah, do you know which one?
I have no idea. Sexy Parodius 18. I don't know, but it's funny watching, like, you know, balls and stuff fly around the screen. Naked ladies. And I'm shooting them with a little submarine.
I bet you like that.
It's a good time when the big boss is like a hog. Big pig.
Yeah, actually, there's only one sexy Parodius. I was confusing things, but there's a bunch of different Parodiuses. So
there's only one sexy Parodius?
I think there's only one.
I could have sworn there's more than one. At least there's different versions.
I mean, I've been wrong before.
It's certainly come out on every console.
Yeah.
That's, like, been capable of handling it. Of course, there's all sorts of crap that comes out in Japan.
Right.
You know, I've got a...
too cool for the US
I've got a convenience store simulator for the Sega Saturn.
Really?
You know, I don't know if it... I don't think it's 7-Eleven, but basically you run the convenience store.
Is that like Monopoly?
You know, I never even played it.
Oh, okay. Because there's this other game called Top Shop that's basically like the store simulator, but no, it's Monopoly.
Really?
Yeah.
No, this looks like you're in the store, like walking around and serving people and stuff.
Why haven't you played that?
I don't
that?
Know. Dude, I've got all sorts of games. Come over one day. We'll play all the crazy stuff.
I mean, that's so much more exciting than like Fear or whatever.
Maybe, you mean Prey?
Yeah, Fear, Prey, you know,
okay.
all those one-syllable word games.
Fear's not bad, actually. That'll be coming out on the 360 as well. Yeah, we could play that sometime. We could make that another gamer experiment.
All right.
All right, listen, everybody. I want you to call in 866-536-1100. Tell us about what games emotionally rocked your world, and also let me know what you think of Prey. We're going to be back after this, and we want to hear from you. As expected, we are back again for the second segment of the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. Got to let everybody know that, you know, I went to the University of Advancing Technology. You can go learn more about it at uat.edu if you're interested in going as well. And look what it got me. It got me a giant radio show, world-renowned. Fame and fortune, every day of my life. Girls and games and
I think I've had sex a couple times in the last year. It's hard to recall.
You can be just like Alon if you go to that school.
Thank you, Andrew, for the sound clip once again. Always a crowd favorite. Always a crowd favorite. All right. So, one thing I didn't talk about is the topic for the second segment. Didn't mention that what I want to talk about now is actually Sony. I want to give you all more time to call in about emotional response to games. Although we do we have a caller right now, Andrew? Because I don't see it on the little computer monitor. We have Craig. Well, let's take a caller before we get into anything else. Craig.
Hey, guys.
Hey there. You are on the air. What can we do for you?
Hey, what's up, Craig?
Are you there?
Yes.
We are here.
Oh, I can't hear you.
Andrew.
Just pretend like you hear us.
Are you fixing it? Oh, boy. Man, that's like a good 35 seconds wasted. All right. Well. Craig, if you can hear us now, feel free to call back in. And you know what? When we put you on the air, just talk. Just talk, and we'll cut you off when we want to. Anyway, 866-536-1100, room for anybody to call in. So I want to talk about Sony a little bit, because it's been, I don't know, I mean, they've been in the news ever since they talked about the price. In fact, hell, they've been in the news forever. But they brought up the fact that their machine's going to cost you an arm, a leg, and possibly a testicle. And people are all getting up in arms about it. And so I don't know, like, I found it strange because I used to bitch about the price of gaming, and I used to whine, and still do, about, you know, Xbox Live downloadables, and finally they're coming to their senses and letting you buy Xbox Live games on disc, at least a select few.
Really? I never heard of that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, they're having a disc of, like, five of them, like Geometry Wars and some other key ones.
That's about time.
Yeah. So anyway, like, I've been wanting that because I want the ability to archive my games. I want the ability to bring it over to a friend's house and play it. I don't have to have my account. I want to be able to have my Xbox break, which is inevitable, and then play it on the next one I own, right?
Or sell the game if you don't like it, which I'm sure all the publishers hate.
Yeah, or when the service is down, like when 360 Xbox Live Arcade service is gone because there's a new system, whatever, 10 years I can show it to my kid or grandkid or my friend's grandkids or whatever and have them play this cool game, right? Which
there's trade-offs with the technology.
Yeah, but anyway, my point is, I like to have it. I like to own it. And having just the data, hell, if I could back it up onto a CD myself, that would be cool. But they don't let you do that. So anyway, I'm upset about these things and micropayments and all that, and I've whined about it, and people are like, what are you whining about? You're silly, right? And now out comes Sony with their $600 PS3, and people are bitching about how Sony's being arrogant, thinking people are going to pay so much money. You're dumb. You know, why would anyone buy that system? Yet they know that they're all going to sell out day one. And so, like, I mean, it's great to see people finally responding with my natural response. Yeah, I don't want to pay $600 for a system, especially one that has no games I actually want to play. But I'm also curious, like, what's this going to do to the field of gamers? Right?
Well, one thing I really hope it doesn't do is set a precedent. I mean, it's funny because it's kind of like the 200, you know, 300 price tag is kind of like, you know, the status quo for consoles for most people, right?
200 was my okay price.
Right, and they're kind of like pushing it up a little bit, you know, like, okay, Xbox 360, you know, when PS2 first came out, all that stuff. They're kind of like pushing it up more, and like Sony now is like pushing it up even more, you know, and
yeah, and before you got here, that's something I mentioned, that at GDC this year, before they talked about the pricing and everything, whoever the head dude was that came out and talked about for Sony's keynote came on and said very slyly, and I mentioned this on the show a few times, he mentioned, and nobody noticed, that they had successfully raised the price of gaming. They successfully got consumers to pay more for gaming, and I don't remember exactly how he put it.
They really like that. It's very interesting, actually. A couple years ago, I was at the DICE conference, which is just kind of like a video game developers conference.
Yeah, it's a little bit smaller and more hardcore.
And
in January.
Right, and at one of the lectures there, I don't remember everything that was said, but they were basically, it was basically very clear that, you know, Sony wants to maintain the high price of video game software, and it seems like they want to just push it up higher and higher and higher. And of course, I mean, you know, to an extent you can understand that, right? Because if they cost more, then they make more money per purchase. But, I mean, I'm always wondering, you know, okay, movies, they cost lots and lots of money to make, probably around the same or more than, you know, some video games. And, okay, you know what? They have their, you know, they have their box office sales and all that, but there's a lot of really expensive movies that go straight to DVD, and DVDs are really cheap. And if they can make, if they can sell the volume to make up for it, I mean, you can just sell games at around $20. Problem is, we've become conditioned as a market, you know, to pay around $50 for a video game, so we kind of just accept that, right? For DVDs, for one reason or another, through circumstance, we've kind of become conditioned to accept that, okay, like around $20, give or take, is around the price point. And yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. Sony is like, let's push this higher, higher.
They got this big high off of telling us that they pushed it higher. It's funny to see the difference. Like, normally I play the part of the consumer. Normally I play the part of the everyday Joe receiving my information, right? But then when you go to GDC, it's this totally other train of thought. Like, they come out there, Jay Allard came out 2 years ago, and he's talking about, you know, ringtone-like purchasing habits and stuff. And they go from the other end. You hear the business end and the developer end, where they're talking to the developers in the crowd. They're talking about how they're going to make the developers more money, basically by making me, the consumer, pay more. And so I'm stuck in this group, sort of like out of my element, hearing the other side of of this business model. And, I mean, I can certainly respect that. I can understand it and roll with the best of them when we're talking about business and finances. But it's still really interesting to see, because then they turn around and when they're talking to the video game magazines and the blogs and stuff, they're coming from the consumer point of view and representing someone more like me, the consumer. And then the answers are totally geared towards what does this person want to hear? Oh, well, don't worry, the games aren't going to be cost too much.
What's
micropayments.
The
it's
Sony
gonna be
representatives?
Choice. Whoever, right? Jay Allard is great at this. He's the perfect example of the PR spin, because that was his public face. And of
right.
course, not so much anymore. I mean, he's been out for a while doing whatever the hell he's doing. But the PR spin, which is something that was actually in the news today about Sony, like I said, people are getting bent out of shape about Sony. And then over today on Kotaku, I saw something about how some marketing materials from earlier in the year got leaked out about the PS3. And this is like Sony Europe. They give them the sheet. It's like, all right, here's how we want to position the PS3. PS3 is being positioned as a computer system, not a computer entertainment system. Like other computer systems, it can be upgraded through the use of readily available industry standard adapters.
That's never worked, and they try that all the time. Not just Sony, but, I mean, the hardware publishers in general. I don't get why they keep going back to that.
Well, they tried with the PS2. They tried in Europe. They sold the PS2 with, like, YA Basic or something, and so you could write Basic code on it and run it, actually
okay.
run a program, right?
Right, right.
With a memory card. And so they said, this is a computer entertainment system. And that's how they've always positioned the PS2, computer entertainment system instead of video game, because it meant that they didn't have to pay certain taxes because computers didn't qualify.
So?
Yeah. And then
that's very interesting.
I finally read, like, in the last couple months that years and years and years in litigation, they have to go back and pay all these back taxes, European import taxes, which I think is fascinating. So anyway, yeah, they had a whole bunch of these marketing things, like, it's just funny to hear the spin on it, and
yeah, I don't know anyone who really considers the PS2 a computer.
Yeah, but seeing it all out in the open is a totally different story. Like, we all knew it happened, but now we can actually see it. All this stuff. We hate Sony. We'll be back after these messages, folks. Give us a call at 866-536-1100.
Hello, it's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
We'll be right back.
Welcome back again to the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. My name's Alon, and next to me is Ara.
Hey, I gotta ask you something.
Yeah.
Speaking of Sony that we were talking about earlier.
We were talking about Sony.
Yeah. What's the deal with that PlayStation 3 font?
Oh, with the Spider-Man font?
Yeah, I mean, like, they totally lifted it from Spider-Man.
Well, don't they own all that? I mean, they are Sony, right? Sony Pictures Entertainment, whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. Just every time I see that, all I'm thinking about is Spider-Man.
Yeah, a lot of people are bitching about that, but it's one of those things that will become ubiquitous eventually. Like, give it a little bit of time, and that's all. People just think it's PlayStation 3 font. But I've always liked it. Everyone liked that. It's just that we associate it with Spider-Man, so I think it's a little weird that suddenly something that was only Spider-Man is now associated so closely with PlayStation 3. Anyway, it looks like we have a caller.
All right.
We had one before, and I don't know what happened. Let's try it again.
Is it Craig this time?
I don't know who it is. Why don't you
Mystery
tell us?
Mystery caller.
You're on the air now.
Hello.
Hey there, can you hear us?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic, because we're not always sure if the callers can hear us.
It's good to hear that everything's working out then.
Fantastic. What's your name?
Brian. Cypher on the Chatterbox.
All right,
or
cool.
Blue Dude, so... I was just calling to mention what they were talking about. They were saying about how the gravity move was used in some other games, I guess in the Serious Sam games.
Yeah, people are bringing that up on our live chat right now, which, by the way, you can join if you go to chatterboxgameshow.com. Yeah, apparently Serious Sam 2 had it, but I mean, they were also talking about, well, not all games had it to the same depth that Prey has it. But I never played Serious Sam 2, so maybe you can fill me in.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I mean, you know, they had it on there, and it was definitely in a different form. I can't remember all of it, but I remember it was to the extent of, you know, having guidelines of where you could walk.
This is pretty much the same way in Prey. There are these, like, glowing trails, and you follow them, and for most of the time, it was like you couldn't even walk off of it because there were all these blocks in your way, kind of like Doom had these square platforms that were elevated, right? And you'd have to jump in order to get on them. And so it's that way. But if you jump, you just fall to the ground because you're on the ceiling. So you jump, you're suddenly detached.
Yeah.
All right. Well, have you actually played Prey?
Yeah, played a little bit of the demo. I guess it's coming into our store tomorrow.
I hope so.
It is.
I certainly want to see it. I'm trying to convince my friend to buy it, the one with the 360.
Hopefully it is. I guess the word hasn't gotten out too much for the game yet. I guess for my store where I work, I think we only have three of the regular copy pre-ordered, and then we've got one special edition. So,
what does the special edition come with?
Special edition came with I think three resin figures, one for the main character and a couple monsters.
Right on. I'm sure those will go to good use in some, you know,
some
real
way,
role-playing game with paper and stuff?
Maybe.
All right. Cool. Well, listen, thanks for the call, unless there's something else.
That's pretty much it, and I love the show.
All right. Well, killer. Thank you very much. And now it's time to talk about emotion in gaming.
All right. Finally.
Yeah, we had said that we were going to talk about this, and I'm certainly ready to. And if people want to call in and tell me their stories about crying your girlfriend to sleep or something over a dead princess, feel free to call in. So I want to wonder, like, you called me earlier today, said, all right, I've got this thing I want to talk about on the show.
Yeah.
And there's, I guess, you're telling me that there's this big urge for, at least in the development world, to make people affected by games?
I would say it's more visible in the press. I don't know how prevalent it is in development. I mean, maybe by extension it is, but, like, yeah, it's really weird. I mean, over the past, I'd say, I don't know, year or so, there's, like, this really big deal that everyone's making about, like, you know, somehow, you know, there's this holy grail of making the player cry in games, as if, like, you know, the player's experience of crying is somehow, like, the ultimate emotion that can be experienced in a game.
What games do you think in the past have attempted to elicit an emotional response? Do you have a list in your head?
Yeah, well, here's the funny thing, right? I mean, like, okay, if the game's, like, crappy enough, like, that'll probably make you cry, but this is not the type of crying that we're talking about. I mean, we're talking about, like, crying in terms of narrative here, right? I mean, like, there's a character that gets established, there's some kind of storyline, and something happens to the character that makes you cry. So, I mean, I really think that, you know, you don't need technology to accomplish that. I mean, you know, there's, okay, you know, I'll admit it. You know, when I was playing Final Fantasy II so many years ago on, you know, on the Super Nintendo, I mean, yeah, I mean, the story, there's some kind of sad plot twists there, and, you know, I was getting a little teary-eyed.
Are people going to call in to correct you and say it was on NES?
Final Fantasy II.
Wasn't it?
Or are you Final talking, like, Fantasy...
Or am I mixing up the fact that Japanese had, like, 8 versions before it ever came to
yeah,
America?
Yeah, the U.S. Final Fantasy II, I
okay.
should, yeah.
Gotcha.
If we haven't geeked out totally enough.
In our old days, we're getting corrected, and we're getting all the Japanese versions.
Yeah, all right. So, U.S. Final Fantasy II, right? It doesn't even matter, though. I mean, the point is that, like, you don't need technology to elicit, you know, the kind of emotional reaction like crying. And the other thing, too, that, you know, I think that everyone's really forgetting about is that, like, you know, games are primarily an interactive medium. You know, the emotion of crying that everybody's talking about, everyone's making a big deal about, is primarily when you get out of narrative. You know, and you can have narrative, and you can have narrative in an interactive medium, but there are things an interactive medium can do that a narrative can't produce. And I think that these are the things that we should be going after. You know, when you're playing, you know, I don't know, let's say you're playing like a fighting game like Street Fighter 2 or something, there's a certain precise quality of tension there that is only made possible because of, you know, the kind of like the idiosyncrasies of the interactions there. If you were just watching a fight, you would not get the same emotions at all.
Well, I think one of the issues is that creating an emotional response, really, it's anchored by the fact that very specific things happen, very specific storyline exists. And when you make something interactive, there's so much that can go wrong. And I think I've heard interactive storytellers discuss this, the fact that when you can't control the person or the storyline, you have a much harder time eliciting that response. And
right.
So, like,
it's I think it's because, really, I mean, we're talking about two different things here. We have, like, interactive elements and we have narrative elements. And narrative elements, in large part, are essentially linear, right? So that's where the lack of control comes from.
Yeah, and that's why games can't really do it. But and the games that do it during a narrative, non-interactive
right.
segment.
Right. I mean, they do it only insofar as they can kind of linearize the experience so that you can guarantee that, you know, A, B, and C happen, so then, like, D finally makes you cry or whatever. But what I'm saying is that, like, okay, that's cool. You know, we have these in movies. We have these in books. We have these in all kinds of stories. But the potential of games is just so much greater than that. You know, we're ignoring, like, basically what the essence of the game is, which is the interactive experience. You know, we don't have to focus so much on these, like, emotions that are primarily and also best elicited by other media.
So basically you think we shouldn't worry about that anymore?
Well, I mean, you know, games as a medium are just... It's kind of like, you can think of it as kind of like a super medium of sorts. They kind of like contain all of their media, right? I mean, you can have a book in a game. You can have a movie in a game. You can have all these things in a game, right?
You can have a game in a game.
You can even have a game in a game.
Shenmue
right.
style.
And, I mean, I just think that it's kind of like, if you want to talk about where you're focusing your efforts or what's more important, you know, why not focus on what your medium does best? And I think that narrative is not what games do best.
I agree with you there. I tried to put together a list of games that I thought attempted to, you know, make us feel something. And there's some of the obvious ones, like the horror games, Silent Hill, Fatal Frame. Those do a pretty good job.
It's funny you bring that up, actually, because, you know, I was watching I was watching someone play Silent Hill 4, right? And we were kind of just, I was kind of like vicariously enjoying the experience through him.
Happens a lot with horror games.
Right. And the funny thing is, like, at least for the part of the game that I was watching, I mean, it's a highly linearized experience. I mean, it's basically using the game as a device to tell you a story, which is fine for what it is. I mean, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but I made this one remark, which I thought was really interesting. It just came out. I wasn't thinking about it. I was like, you know, well, this is really cool, but I don't want to be challenged when I'm going through this. You know, it's like, this is really interesting. I want to watch what happens. But the part of it, the game part of it, it's kind of like it's a disconnect because it interferes with you enjoying, you know, this kind of narrative. You know, it makes the whole experience stilted in a way.
Well, I'm with you. I find it really difficult to be emotionally moved by a game because it's by a movie's a different story. I can watch a movie and, you know, be upset or be happy or whatever. But when I'm playing a game, I have full control over it, and it just seems odd to me to even have it affect me at all.
Right.
Because I'm directing it, and for some reason, that's a complete disconnect for me.
Right. And consider this. You know, like, let's say you're watching a movie, right? And 20 minutes into it, all of a sudden, you have to play some kind of ridiculous puzzle to see what happens next. I mean, nobody who's watching a movie would ever endure that. I mean, they would be like, okay, this is ridiculous. I just want to watch the movie. Somehow this is acceptable for games.
Yeah, well, hopefully some of the puzzles are cool.
Right. I mean, if it's done right, then you enjoy the puzzles, and then you enjoy the story part of it too, and they kind of both kind of reinforce each other. But, I mean, in a lot of games, it's like they spend so much time on this narrative portion that they kind of forget that, like, okay, oh, we're making a game. Oh, okay, here's something interactive. And, you know, usually it's, you know, leaves a lot to be desired, to say the least.
Yeah, and what I came to accept a long time ago is that different games cater to different people. Like, I'm not so much into the story-driven games. And that's just because when I play a game, I'm playing it to play it, to enjoy the actual control and what I can do with it.
Right.
It's a personal challenge. When you're playing an RPG game, to be honest, like, they're not very challenging. You go around and you grind until you're powerful enough to get through the next, you know, dungeon or whatever. You play a guy and you press the action button or the fight button, and it takes off so much energy. All right, and then if you need to heal yourself, you heal yourself. And if you die first, it's probably because you haven't ground enough in the game.
Yeah, that's really funny, too. I always thought as thought of, you know, the level systems in RPGs kind of like a simulation of progression of skill. You know,
no, it's a simulation of wasted time.
Well, no,
that's not a simulation.
It's an actual waste of time.
It's an actuation.
You know, I mean, if there were actual mechanics that involved skill, which, I mean, there's a modicum of skill in a lot of these. I mean, we're being very general. But also a lot of them, particularly, you know, Japanese ones. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's just grind, 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 boss. You know, where the skill comes in is, you know, if you get to the boss before you've, you know, ground sufficiently, I guess, and you're not as strong as you should be, then it's interesting, then it's challenging, you know?
Yeah, well, sometimes when there's thought, like, even Pokemon does this, where, I mean, maybe not so much for adults who have more experience with this, but for kids, like, you got to think about it. This type of Pokemon fights well against this type of enemy, right? And so that makes some sense.
Right, and I think that's why they introduced those kinds of, like, elemental attributes into the games, because then now there's a strategy that...
Never thought I'd be saying Pokemon's better than Final Fantasy. Or Dungeon Warrior. Listen, we've got a caller on the line. We're going to bring in more callers, hopefully, in the next segment. That's what segment 4 is going to be.
What's the number?
866-536-1100. Thank you for the reminder. We'll be right back with a Smart Attack and with callers. Welcome back, everybody, for the fourth and final segment of the I Can't Hear Alon Talking Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show.
Fourth segment already. Time flies.
Fourth segment. Thank you very much, Andrew. Next to me, as always, is Ara.
Yo.
And he's the co-host with me now. And so far, he hasn't decided to leave, which is great. We're going on 3 episodes. Fantastic. I appreciate it. Now, UAT.edu, I went there. I think Ara's driven by it. And if you want to go
there... I haven't even driven by it.
You have. You totally have. It's across from Fry's. Anyway, UAT.edu, University of Advancing Technology. Go take a look. If you're interested in the industry, you can do it. You can get in there. And I did. All right.
Well, I didn't see it if I drove by it.
It's there. It's kind of hard to see. The sign's not big. It's not pretentious. You know, it's no...
University of Maryland.
There you go. Whatever that... Is that where you went?
Yeah.
Fantastic. All right, now, every couple of weeks... We bring in a fine young gentleman named Nathan Smart to give us his take on whatever it is he's busy taking that week in games. And recently, apparently, he got to try an old game. I think you may have heard of Black and White, a little Peter Molyneux action.
Oh, it's not a Japanese game this time.
No.
I was looking forward to him trying to pronounce Japanese game names again.
No, but I'm going to bring on Nathan Smart to discuss some feelings. Some feelings that are very relevant, especially given the new Sony advertising that we haven't even talked about. We've talked about Sony, and we skipped by the advertising some people think is racist. So here's Nathan Smart with his take on Black and White 2.
Thanks, Alon. This week I've been playing a lot of Black and White 2. I got the game because I thought it was going to be the sequel to Race Relations from the Civil Rights era. I was wrong. I've been feeling guilty lately because I haven't interacted much with the opposite color, as much as I'd like to, and this game was going to be my ticket out of Guilt City. I opened it up, installed it, and instead was treated to a game where I'm a god trying to choose between helping my people or being mean to them. I was really angry at first because I was thinking, how the heck am I going to get over my guilt now? Then, something weird happened. Something that touched my heart. Something that pulled on my testy strings. I chose the ape character, and he was just moseying along, gathering grain and pooping on storehouses. This got me kind of angry, so I punished him. I don't want him gathering grain, I just want him to poop on storehouses. Anyways, an opposing army approached, and so I decided to destroy their city. I can't have armies approaching my town, not even just to walk by. I took my armies and my ape creature and directed them to tear up the enemy's town. My armies went to task, but my ape decided to ignore me, and this is where I was touched. Instead of destroying the town, he decided to gather trees. I watched him gather a tree, and I assumed he was going to take it to our storehouse. Instead, he planted the tree in the enemy's city. What a perfect metaphor for race relations in our times. Racist people are always getting so angry at black people for approaching them, and instead of attacking their towns like Harlem and Beverly Hills, wouldn't it be nice if they planted trees there? Or better yet, pooped on their storehouses. I know, I'm living in a dream world. I completely think I'm a nut job. Just hear me out. The next time someone you don't like does something mean to you, instead of completely think I'm a nut job. Just hear me out. The next time someone you don't like does something mean to you, instead of retaliating, why don't you just look them in the eye, grab a tree, and plant it in the nearest piece of property that they own? Or look for a shed where they store stuff and just drop out a little poop on it. Wouldn't that just blow their minds? It's a new thing I've come up with that I'm calling Poop It Forward, and I hope you'll pass it on. Alan?
Thank you very much for that, Nathan. I appreciate that. Sometimes you even get to be funny. That's great. I'm ready to poop it forward. I don't know about you, but I ate a little veggie burger before I came into the studio.
Yeah, I think that's just you, man.
I've been very, very healthy lately. Vegan eat. I went to a vegan restaurant this last week.
Congratulations.
Did I tell you that? Yeah.
I ate a lot of chicken today.
So I got a lot of fiber running through me. I think I could use that. All right, now, we were talking about emotion last segment. Emotion in games. It's a very, very loaded topic. I was getting emotional about it. And we can talk about that a little bit more. I want people to call us, but if you can't call because you're listening to the podcast, feel free to email us. I want to hear some stories about, even if it's like meta emotion outside the game, the girlfriend got so pissed off that you were playing that it affected your real life, or you played a game and it made you cry like a little girl, you didn't go out for 2 weeks.
Yeah, we're especially looking for those stories.
Yeah, feel free to call us. I want to read a couple of those on the air next week. Don't call us. Email us. And if you can call in the next few seconds, well, then do that too. 866-536-1100. In the meantime, we've got a caller possibly talking about something else. Let's hear what Eric has to say. You're on the air.
Hey.
Hello there.
How you doing, Ara?
Hey, what's up, man?
So, I called with something semi-relevant to talk to, actually.
Right on. We've got like 2 minutes, so let it fly.
You were talking about, well, Black and White, by the way. I got really bored with the original game. I would always degenerate into picking up my own villagers and sacrificing them because you could do that and it was fun.
You could not do that in the second one?
I don't know. I never played the second one, but that's what the first one always turned in.
That's pretty antisocial, man.
That's me.
All right.
That big university mentality.
All right, so what is the topic you're actually calling in to discuss?
The computer system versus video game console thing. You were talking about how expensive the...
KFNX News Time.
What, Andrew, that's twice...
Is he still on?
Please continue.
I'm here. Well, you were talking about how expensive the Sony systems were going to be...
Is he still on?
Please continue.
I'm here. Well, you were talking about how expensive the Sony systems were going to be, and even the Xbox 360s are $300 to $400. But the first-hand experience I do have with that as a computer system versus just a straight video game console is with HD enthusiasts, which I guess I am one of, but I have friends who are even more so. And, you know, you buy a $300 Dell, comes with Windows XP Media Center, and they're into all this great HD content that they stream to their Xbox 360 to play on the HD projector, the HD TV, that does the online transcoding, blah, 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 blah. But the point is it's cheap, and it works, and you can do it. So what is, you know, with this fiasco going on with all the HD DVD-ROM stuff and Sony's going to introduce Blu-ray with no content. I guess I'm saying I agree with you, and I'm wondering what they're offering at that price.
So why is it costing that much money?
Yeah, I mean, how is it anything but a video game
console? I think Sony had this plan from day one. First, we're going to make a system that everybody loves because it's not going to be overpriced. Then we're going to make this other system, which is even cooler, and, well, really didn't cost any more money. But then when everybody's totally sucked in and we have 70% of the market share, we're going to lay on them the classic Sony, whatever you call it, the classic Sony business model.
You know what I think they're actually doing? I think that they saw what happened with, like, every console that comes out where, like, you know, well, lately anyway, right, with, like, Xbox 360, they were eBaying them for, like, $1,200 and up. And I think they were probably just like, okay, well, you know what, let's just release it at an exorbitant price and all the retards will just buy it no matter how much it is, we'll just buy it. And then we'll bring it down for, like, normal consumers.
That's exactly what I said they will do.
I agree.
Three shows before you came on to the air with us.
Wholeheartedly. And I haven't even heard those shows.
Yeah. No, I've got a whole theory on that. Anyway, that's the music, so it's the end of the show. I really appreciate the call, Eric. Thanks for calling
Eric.
In. Next time, we're going to get callers to call in earlier in the show.
That's
and
a good plan.
It's an easy phone number. It's an easy thing to do. Now, I haven't mentioned in a long time that we are part of the AllGames.com network. So for those of you who want to hear us throughout the week and don't have the podcast, go to AllGames.com. They even play some of our older shows. So, anyway, I just wanted to plug them a bit because I haven't talked about it in a while. We're going to be back next week, as always, Mondays, 9 p.m. West Coast, midnight East Coast. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. We will be back next week.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your bass belong to us.